Welcome into First Take, a magical night for Luca. I'm Victoria Arlen filling in for Molly. Happy Wednesday, everyone. And it's even a happier Wednesday because we've got Chris Mad Dog Russo here, as well as Monica McNutt. And we also have a ton of NFL to get to with a ton of different voices that will be joining us. But we're going to start with the magic of Luka Doncic, who is having a very happy Wednesday, I'd say. And why, do you ask? Well, he did something never before seen in the NBA. 60 points, 21 rebounds, and 10 assists to help the Mavs pull off a 126-121 comeback win over the New York Knicks. And here is a very tired Luka after a historic and magical performance.
It's never been done in NBA history, a 60-point, 20-rebound triple-double. 60 points, 20 boards, never happened, baby. How's it feel right now?
I'm tired as hell.
You can rest later. You're young.
I need a recovery beer.
For a player, Luka, doing something that's never been done before, it's hard to do. There's been some great players before him. I think he was, as we were walking in, Elgin Baylor, I think Wilt, is that correct? He was in that class, and then he separated himself and made his own class, which is pretty cool.
Pretty cool, I'd say. Luka's performance makes him one of three players in NBA history with a 50-20-10 game along with Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor. But Luka stands alone as the only player with 60 points, 21 rebounds, and 10 assists in a single game. And with all of that, Mad Dog, is this the best regular season performance ever?
I know you guys want me to go out there and find some other games, and I will try to find a couple for you. But listen, he only took 31 shots. He only made two threes. He made the great basket at the end off the rebound.
Oh, come on now.
He's not a great free throw shooter. He missed the one he had to miss for the basket. Mm-hmm. But listen, it's not the 100-point game that Wilt had in 62 when he scored 100 against the Knicks, 28 for 32 at the line. I don't know what the – I think it was 63 that Elgin had against the Knicks in that same year. West had 63 one year against the Knicks. I know you're going to bring up the triple-double. These official scores with this triple-double, it's overrated anyway. They give you an assist no matter what you get. So I take these triple-doubles with a grain of salt. But if you want to go there, Oscar had 56-12 in a December game against the Lakers in which they won. You throw that in. And a game that I love, and I listen, I understand Doncic had an incredible performance. And they won, and I'll get to the blown lead in a minute. How about Bird, my buddy? He had 60 against the Hawks. The game was in New Orleans on a neutral site game. He had 32 points in 14 minutes, and he was incredible. And Bird did it with McHale, Parrish, DJ. There's nobody else on Dallas who can score besides Doncic. But listen, I'm not going to go crazy. I would like to go crazy, but how about the Knicks? Here is a stat. Do you know that in the last 13,887 NBA games, this is from Colin Russo, my little 20-year-old, did you know in the 13,887, James Dunn, this is for you, did you know there has never, ever been a team to blow a 9-point lead with 35 seconds or less left in the game? And Tom Thibodeau's team did that. And Reggie Miller's game, when he made the shots against the Knicks in game one of the playoffs in 95, they were down 8 with about 18, 19 seconds. So don't count that one. Think about it for a second. How do you blow a 9-point lead with 33 seconds to go? But listen, to be fun, Doncic had an incredible night. I'll take three or four others who are just as good.
Okay, so the answer, yes or no?
No.
No. Okay. All right, Monica, what about you? Appreciate all those stats, though. All right, Monica, what about you?
Mad Dog, you could have waited till the second part of our conversation to point out what was an unfortunate debacle for the Knicks. Look, I think when we pull up the graphic and there are the points and what Jason Kidd, said is true, that no one had ever done that. I mean, I don't have my basketball encyclopedia in front of me, Mad Dog, to check the significance of each of these regular season games that we're talking about. But in terms of hitting what Luka admitted he thought was the game winner, but that ultimately was the basket that set the game into overtime, and the way that he did it, you mentioned those stats in terms of how long he played. He also only had 3 turnovers. I'd have to really sit and dig and rank all time, but I do think what we saw last night was spectacular and was absolutely historic and will live up there with the greatest regular season performances we've seen. I just think, yes, I understand your qualm in terms of statistics and triple-doubles at this point in the NBA. However, right now, the way that we play the game, what Luka was able to do, how he was able to do it, the improbability that you just pointed out of ultimately coming out with that victory, I have a tough time throwing any water on this one, Mad Dog.
Tough time putting it as the best.
No. I won't say the single best, but it's definitely, it's trending that way. I think it's trending that way.
Well, Wilt had 100 points in the game.
Yeah.
So, that's 40 more. Kobe had 81 in the game. Let's not forget that. See, I don't pay as much attention to these rebounds and assists. These official scorers doing these, and they give you an assist no matter what. Oh, it's so overrated. They do a terrible job at that with the statistical outline. I mean, we didn't even know what a triple-double was with Oscar Robertson doing it for a season. But but Monica's right. Well, how am I going to go crazy? He took 31 shots. He only made two threes. They came from nine down. He made a great play at the end to force the overtime. Then he played pretty well in the overtime. He made his free throws. He only had three turnovers. I didn't even realize that. Monica teaches me something. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to debate that. But listen, Wilt had 100 points. He had Now, listen, there was a carnival aspect to that game, but he had 100 points. 100 points in the game. That's hard to top that one. No?
It is hard to top. And when you mentioned the Kobe 81, God rest his soul, obviously that's a tough one too. But I think there was I'm going to say that there was an element of competitiveness, and the Knicks were not trying to lose. Not that the teams that were playing against Wilt and Kobe, but I do think when Kobe went on that roll, it's Kobe's closing out his career. Like, it was a big deal. I don't know. I do want to take this moment, though, and just shout out our colleague and friend, Alan Hahn, who was on the call locally for MSG Networks last night. A chance to fulfill a dream for Hahn. You did that, my dog. You crushed it. What an incredible game. Like, very, very tough loss for the Knicks. But, I mean, Luka continues to add to his legacy at just 23. Like, this is crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. And, you know, honestly, he scored or assisted on 85 of the Mavericks' 126 points. It's up there on one of the top for sure. Monica, thanks for hanging with us. We always appreciate you for sure.
Thanks,
joining in on the Magic. Now we got to move on to the NFL because that didn't last long at all. The Denver Broncos fired first-year head coach Nathaniel Hackett on Monday, and this move comes after a 4-11 start. In Sunday's 51-14 loss to the Los Angeles Rams, Hackett's firing puts an abrupt end to the shortest run of any non-interim head coach in franchise history. An interesting
comment. He'll be the first one to tell you he didn't play up to his standard, didn't play up to our standard. He needs to be better. I don't think we made a coaching move based on Russ. You know, that wasn't what it's all about. That's not why we're getting a new coach to turn around Russ. It's about the entire organization. It's about the entire football team. It's just not one player. It's not whether Russ is fixable or not. We do believe he is. We do.
All right, we got Chris Canty and Amber Wilson here. All right, Chris, do you believe that Russell Wilson is fixable?
No, I don't. And don't listen to anything that George Payton said at that presser yesterday, because he's not telling the truth. The head coach that's coming in, his number one priority is going to be fixing Russell Wilson. But guys, I think the reality of the situation is, although the Denver Broncos think that they can fix him, Russell Wilson is a declining player. The evidence is what we're seeing this year, but also what we saw the last couple of years in Seattle. First of all, his inability to be able to stay healthy is a big concern. But then some of the decision-making that we're seeing from Russ is not what we've come to know him for, right? When you looked at the interceptions that he threw in the first quarter against the Rams game, those weren't great defensive plays or just errant throws. They were poor decisions. When you look at the game before against the Kansas City Chiefs, fourth and short, and you throw a pick six to Willie Gay, that's just a terrible decision. So you can't blame the head coach for poor decision-making from the quarterback. And the other thing that we have to acknowledge is Russ is not great playing outside of the structure, not great at playing inside of the structure of the offense. Most of the splash plays we've seen from Russell Wilson throughout his career have been off-schedule throws, right? Breaking contain, getting out on the edge of defense, extending the down, and then making these big explosives down the field. Russell Wilson doesn't feel like he has the athleticism to continue to do that, guys. And that's why he's got a career-worst six-game losing streak. You're talking about career lows in QBR, completion percentage, touchdowns, and yards per attempt. The evidence is there. Russell Wilson is a descending player, and I'm not sure that the Denver Broncos can do enough around him in order to get the return on the investment that they had with this quarter of a billion that they paid him before the season.
Amber, what do you think?
I think that Chris Canty and I were having a very different conversation just a matter of months ago, right? Everyone's already given up now on Russell Wilson with what was seen from him in Denver. I have 10 years that I saw of Russell Wilson before that. This is a guy who's made it to two Super Bowls, who has a Super Bowl ring, 9 Pro Bowl selections, 9 winning seasons, a 104 winning to 53 losses in Seattle. Like, this is that same quarterback, yes. Mm. Maybe he isn't 2015 Russell Wilson anymore. But to expect a guy to have fallen off the cliff like this in his 11th season at 33 years old when he started the season with the Broncos, we would have never seen anything like this in NFL history. You've been watching the NFL, Russo, for a very long time. Tell me the guy who has that resume who falls off the cliff like that. It does not exist. And so because of that, yes, they can fix him. He doesn't have to even be 2015 Russell Wilson. But Canty mentioned there the trending downwards of Russell Wilson, even going back to his final season in Seattle. Fine. All they have to do, though, is find a coach that can work with what he can still give them. There's no way that you can go from one of the best quarterbacks in the league to one of statistically the worst quarterbacks in the entire NFL in the way that he has in just one season. Even the down seasons for Russell Wilson the last couple seasons, and don't forget he was playing through that thumb injury last season as well in Seattle, well, still good seasons by all other accounts.
Yeah, I have to agree with Mr. Canty. I'd love to be on your side. I think Chris is 100% right. I mean, and maybe Seattle knew something, you know, when they got rid of him. Yeah. You know, I mean, Geno Smith's been better than he has. And listen, George Payton's lost. I mean, he has done I'll get on him later. Yeah. He has done an awful job with that football team. Mm-hmm. And to sit there and say, this is not the quarterback is the dumbest thing I've ever heard
in my
life. They've lost 8 games by one possession. Besides this week, they've had a very good defense. And Wilson's been terrible. He doesn't run. No. There's no spontaneity to his game. He doesn't run anymore. He's 33 years of age, off a bad year last year, and this is a crazy thing to say. I actually think this is going to hurt his Hall of Fame candidacy.
Mm. Really?
Before this year began, we all thought he'd be a Hall of Famer. This is going to be the end, maybe, of Russell Wilson. This is how it ends. That concerns me. I mean, are you watching a Hall of Fame quarterback right now? You're certainly not. He had Hall of Fame years, but I'm not too sure if we're watching a Hall of Fame quarterback right now. He has been atrocious. The game the other day was as bad as it gets. Rippon won the game against Arizona, so he's won 2 or 3 games. And it began the first game of the year when they opted for that 60 stupid yard field goal in Seattle. The dumbest thing in the world. And now everybody killed Hackett for that? How about Wilson saying, hey, on it now. I'm Russell Wilson. It's against my old team. We're not trying to kick up. It was 4th and 3, wasn't it? Short.
Yeah.
Let me get the first down here to keep the clock moving. So he has been atrocious. I think he's shot. That's a tough thing to say. I think he's shot. And they can bring Bill Walsh back. He is not going to be saved here as the Denver quarterback.
Well, here's the other thing, dog, that we have to bring up. Russell Wilson has been one of the most hit quarterbacks in the National Football League over the last decade. As a matter of fact, no quarterback had more sacks on him in the 2010s than Russell Wilson. And so we can't assign this Tom Brady-like longevity to Russell Wilson, even though you're talking about a quarterback that's in his mid-30s. Maybe Russell Wilson, as far as the athlete, as far as the quarterback is concerned, his better days are behind him.
That's possible.
I think we have to entertain that possibility. But the other thing that has to be a serious concern is what we're hearing about Russell Wilson and how he relates to his teammates. And this is one of those issues that has followed him, even in Seattle, when we had the Legion of Boom and not necessarily all of the guys in that locker room being in love with him. You're starting to hear some of those same grumblings going on in Denver, on top of the guy having his own office in the building, having his own parking spot and all of this other nonsense. Russell Wilson feels like he's separated himself from his teammates. And that's not the place that you want your quarter of a billion dollar quarterback to be. The quarterback position in the NFL is a leadership position by nature. And Russ has not done a great job of leading these guys in Denver. He hasn't done a great job of ingratiating himself. And it's starting to show in how this team is letting go of the rope toward the end of the season.
He had separated himself from the pack. We're talking about a guy who was a Hall of Famer just last season. And I know you're trying to convince me that he's playing his way out of the Hall of Fame now. Yeah. After a 10-year career with a resume, that's completely absurd at this point. Again, we are talking about a player that, yes, maybe he's not at the height of his game anymore. I'll believe that in his mid-30s. Fine. Because of all those hits. Yep. I'll even take that argument. But we're not, again, talking about a guy who's on a gradual decline, right? This isn't like a Matt Ryan, or even maybe now we're finally seeing from Tom Brady in his mid-40s. This is like a fall-off-the-cliff decline. We have never seen it after this long of a career. And so there's got to be more to that story. It can't just be Russell Wilson was 33, 34 years old now. It makes no sense when you consider the caliber of quarterback that he was. Maybe what it is that he's lost a little bit of a step, and so now he needs to be in a run-first kind of offense, maybe with a little play-action sprinkled in. Oh, by the way, that worked in Seattle for many, many years before Shane Waldron instilled his offense last season in 21 with Russell Wilson. We have seen him not work in a system now for two seasons, but we saw him work for nine seasons before that. He doesn't have to be. I'm not arguing that he's ever going to be at the top of his game again. I'm just arguing that if Denver makes the right hire and gets the right staff in place, that absolutely Russell Wilson can be enough.
Yeah, but how much say is Russell Wilson going to have in this process? Because the $250 million that they paid him says he's going to have a lot of say. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's the place that the Denver Broncos want to live, because remember, the reason why he was ousted in Seattle was because he wanted more say. And who pushed back on that? Pete Carroll.
Yep.
You got more of what Russell Wilson wanted in 2022. How'd that turn out for the Denver Broncos? Not very good. So I'm not sure that more Russ is better in terms of getting the results that the Denver Broncos new ownership is looking for. And that's the part that I have serious questions about in terms of the Broncos trying to chart a path forward, because with seeing this version of Russell Wilson, how attractive is this job going to be for the Denver Broncos as they go through the coaching cycle? Is this going to be a job that the most qualified candidates want to sign up for? Because if you're a head coach that has options, i.e. Sean Payton, is this the job you want? Likely not the job you're looking for. So that's the question that I have now in terms of how the Denver Broncos get this thing fixed. Who wants to sign up with Russell Wilson as their quarterback for the foreseeable future with not a lot of resources to reshape this team in the way of cap space and in the way of draft capital? I'm sorry, it's a hard pass for me, dog. I don't think the Denver Broncos can get this thing fixed. And Russell Wilson, in all of this, is probably his own worst enemy.
And if I generally agree with him. I agree with Chris. And remember, if you bring Peyton in there, he wants Fangio to be his defensive coordinator. So that can't work. Fangio just got fired. And run right.
Different ownership group, though.
True. But Fangio's going to go back to work for the same franchise that they fired him a couple years ago.
It seems unlikely. I wouldn't want to take that step back. But different ownership groups, yeah. Maybe. I guess it's plausible. Maybe Peyton changes strategy. It's one of 32. Let's stop acting like these jobs aren't desirable coaching candidates.
But
it's one of 32.
But you don't want to be one of the 32 teams that has to get stuck with a retread like Lovie Smith got stuck with the Houston Texans or Dave Culley the year before that. Like, there's levels to this, you know what I'm saying? So the Denver Broncos coming into the season was viewed as a premium job. They went the way of hiring Nathaniel Hackett, made the big swing with Russell Wilson, and now all of a sudden, over the course of one season,
you're
talking about it being one of the worst jobs that will be available this coming offseason.
But we got to look at what jobs are available, though. I mean, I don't know what Dallas is going to do with McCarthy. How about they lose first round? What's Jerry Jones going to do?
What the Chargers are going to do with Brandon Staley?
Well, I think he'll stay now. They made the postseason.
We'll see with that. That's an organization that decided to get rid of Marty Schottenheimer when they went 14-2. And we also saw in 2017 Mike Mularkey with the Tennessee Titans win a playoff game and still get fired.
Spanos the game ball.
It's not off the board.
That's fair.
Well, but for the Broncos, this is the franchise's fourth search for a head coach since January of 2017 and the third since January of 2019. But we got to move on to the Packers, because the path to the playoffs for the Packers is still intact. And this is a little bit of a positive shift in the right direction, because two games remaining, the Packers must win both of their three games, and either the Commanders lose one of their final two games or the Giants must lose both of their games, giving the Packers a 37% chance to make the playoffs, according to ESPN Analytics. Here's a hopeful Aaron Rodgers.
We're all going to be Browns fans this week.
Hell yeah.
Oh, Browns.
Wow.
Definitely pulling for the Browns, and obviously we got to take care of our own business. But I mean, we got a big jump of confidence this last week. A lot of people are probably saying, "Oh, you beat a couple bad teams, and the Bears and the Rams." Whoa. You know, now see what happens when you play against a good football team. We went down to Miami, played a good football team, and had a really nice second half, and came out of there with a big win.
Big win indeed. Now Green Bay is currently 3.5-point home favorites over the Minnesota Vikings. Chris, should they be favored?
Hell no. Why are we going to favor the Green Bay Packers? Because they've won three games?
I don't know.
All right, let's look at their three-game win streak. I mean, they beat the Bears, And they beat the Rams, two teams that have combined to be 8-22 this season. And they beat a Miami Dolphins team who, coming into last Sunday's game, had lost three straight. And their quarterback may or may not have been concussed in the fourth quarter, where he threw interceptions on three consecutive drives. Why am I going to give the Green Bay Packers any credit? I'm not going to do it. I'm going to lean on the body of work that they've shown me throughout the majority of this season, which tells me that they're not a good football team. So to be able to reel off five straight to end the season and punch their ticket to the playoffs, 8-ball says doubtful. And then when you look at the Minnesota Vikings, this week's opponent in week 17, the Vikings set an NFL record for wins in one-score games. 11-0 this season in one-score games. The Green Bay Packers offense ain't blowing out anybody. So this is going to be a closely contested game in the division, and Minnesota has everything to play for because they're still alive for the number one seed in the NFC, depending on what happens with the Eagles and Jalen Hurts' overall health. So I don't think that they should be favored at all. This Minnesota Vikings team is a legit squad. I don't know when we're going to start giving them credit for being a good football team, but I don't know what world the Green Bay Packers should be favored at home against the Minnesota Vikings. I just don't see it.
That's why I started with you. That was fantastic. All right, Amber, what about you?
Yeah, I haven't been giving the Vikings credit all season long, right? Yeah. That's one of those teams. Maybe it's the Kirk Cousins effect that we've been questioning every single week, and all they do is win and win and win and win 12 times. I've seen a lot more of that from them than I've seen from the Green Bay Packers that are sitting below 500 right now. No, absolutely, the Packers should not be favored, even though they're at home against this Vikings team. So I'm finally willing now, as we sit here, ready to give the Vikings some credit. Only ready to do it, though, against that team, a 7-8 team. But I don't think the Vikings are going to have a problem here against the Green Bay Packers team. Like Canty just mentioned, a three-game win streak, and all of a sudden we're acting like they're going to walk into a postseason when they've needed a lot of help to even get to this point where they're alive for the postseason. We had them dead 1 month ago in the
division. They had a five-game losing streak prior to that.
Right, and then it took like five other teams losing. Mm-hmm. Everything's kind of falling into place. Now they have to win out. They need a little help from their friends still in the New York Giants or the Washington Commanders, and yet we're acting like everything's clicking for a Green Bay team that, by the way, barely beat the Miami Dolphins, that was being dominated by the Dolphins in the first half, and that it did take Tua throwing three straight uncharacteristic interceptions on the final three offensive possessions of that game. Because of that, and those interceptions, by the way, it wasn't like the Packers were doing anything defensively remarkable.
No.
At least two of those interceptions were bad throws. One of them was an admittedly badly run route by Mostert. So it's not like the Packers were doing something that would give us confidence that they're going to be able to shut down this Vikings offense that has been winning these games all season long, even if it's by close margins. That is a tested Vikings team. They ain't going to be scared of Lambeau.
Let's give them a little betting advice, all right?
Let's hear it.
Forget the point spread because there's only three and a half. Life on the line. You got to get the game right. Who are you taking in the game?
What time is the game?
4:25.
Oh.
By the way, team in the Vikings.
Probably lean toward Aaron Rodgers.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Probably lean toward Aaron Rodgers.
We're talking about a Vikings team that routed them 23-7, and I understand that was months ago, and everyone's like, oh, the Packers, they figured it out. These rookie receivers, they're coming along. They haven't figured anything out. So, listen, all your sports arguments are normally always, you know, hearkening back to a different era.
Not all of a sudden now.
You're going to live in the moment with a three-game win streak for a bad Packers team? What are we doing?
If my life's on the line,
you're going with Rodgers.
I have to take Lambeau. I have to take Rodgers.
I'm right there with you. They've won in the underdog.
And here's another one. They won 16 in a row in December. This team has won 16 consecutive games in the month of December.
Yep.
And one other thing, let's be fair about the interceptions. When he started to throw the picks, the game was 20-20. The biggest play of that game on Christmas Day was the Mostert fumble there at the end of the half because it was 20-10. Green Bay went down the field, kicked the field goal, and then they got the ball, started the third quarter, and went right down the field again and scored a touchdown. So I understand Tua screwed up, but Rodgers threw an interception in the middle of those things too. Green Bay was the better football team than Miami.
No.
In the second half of that game. They were the better team.
I don't know if I could buy into that, dog. What I will say is that Green Bay's defense gave them a chance when they got that stop after the fake punt snafu in the first half.
They got that.
And they held it to a field goal, which kept it a one possession.
And then the fourth down, they got the fumble right after that.
Yeah. So I would say that
That's
kept them in it.
But
here's what I will say. Here's what I will say. The evidence, the body of work, leans toward the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, point differential is one of the best tools that we have to talk about how good a football team is. The Minnesota Vikings are top 10 in point differential. When you look at the turnover margin, the Minnesota Vikings are fifth in turnover differential. The Green Bay Packers are outside of the top 10 in both of those statistical categories. So to me, when we start trying to peel back the layers and decide which team we're going to lean toward, I lean toward the entirety of the body of work. I lean toward the Minnesota Vikings because they've been by far the most consistent team between the two.
They have been, but again, you are, if you are betting against when they need the game, they need the game. If you're betting against Rodgers in that building, Holiday against a dome team, when you know at the very least the Packers are going to be in a game because the Vikings win every game by a field goal. So if you know that, you have to take Rodgers and you got to take the better quarterback. Better quarterback at home. And they're playing well.
Is he the better quarterback?
Is he the better quarterback?
Life
on the line.
Life, Amber. Life on the line.
Life but on we the gotta, line.
You got to get it right season. Or we say bye-bye.
The Vikings are used to everybody betting against them this season, right?
I like Minnesota, but Christopher, help me out here.
Listen.
Rodgers or Cousins?
Aaron Rodgers is the reigning back-to-back MVP, but he hadn't played like it this season. You're talking about the a quarterback that's 27th in QBR this year. Now, he's been playing better the last three games, but we'll see how long that lasts. What I've seen from these teams, based on what the Green Bay Packers have shown me, it ain't going to last long.
Also, we're not talking about Tom Brady. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. Like, we've seen him lose many a times with his life on the line. In fact, he's kind of known for it in the
postseason. Postseason. He's 16-0.
Seems even more important than the
regular season. He is 16. He has won. Be fair. Yeah. Statistic doesn't lie. They have won, and he has won 16 straight games.
Yes.
In December.
Because it's cold. Minnesota knows something about that.
Minnesota knows something about the cold.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day's May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod and have a fabulous day.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Well, the Packers are rooting for a Commanders loss against the Browns, and Ron Rivera announced this morning that Carson Wentz, not Taylor Heineke, will get the start. Mad Dog, you are not happy about
this. I am not a big Rivera fan anyway.
Yeah.
But this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's not like Carson Wentz played great in the first, whatever it was, six, seven games of the year. He stunk. Yeah. And he's been bad forever. Did he not see the highlights of the Jacksonville game last year in Week 17? Yeah. I mean, gee whiz. And you're going to blame this on Heinicke? They lost to San Francisco, beats everybody in that building.
Yeah.
Against the Giants, he got a couple of bad calls at the end of the game that could have tied the game up. This is not – and Heinicke against the Giants the week before that drove him down the field to kick a field goal to win the, to tie the game up. That game they ended up tied in overtime. This is a horrendous – and again, I'm not a huge fan of him anyway, but this is a move. If you're Aaron Rodgers in this – if you're a Packer fan, you have to be delighted – yeah, that he's going back. I told you, look at it from a Packer fan standpoint. If you're a
Keeping on the Packer
fan,
train, yeah.
Who do you want to have be the quarterback against Cleveland this week? Heinicke or Wentz?
Either of the above.
Wentz. Neither of the. You got to pick somebody.
Wentz.
Oh, you won't win. You know what? Play Wentz. I don't want. Heineke's got a little spunk. He's got a little spirit to him. Play Wentz. It's a horrible move.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, look at it from the perspective of the players in the Commanders' locker room. Who do they want to be their quarterback? All you have to do is watch the body language of those players on the field. They respond overwhelmingly to Taylor Heinicke more so than Carson Wentz. So if you're Ron Rivera and you've got your pulse on that team, why would you go back to a guy that the rest of the locker room has seemingly turned their back on? I don't understand it. I mean, under Heinicke, they started out, 5-1-1 through their first seven games? Mm-hmm. That's when they went on this streak that gave them the opportunity to put themselves in the playoff picture. I can't blame them for stumbling, you know, the last couple of weeks. Listen, they lost to the New York Giants, but everybody loses after going on the road and playing the San Francisco 49ers. It's ridiculous what that Niners team has been able to do in terms of beating people up. But in looking at what Taylor Heinicke did, even in that game against the Niners, he gave them an opportunity. He gave them a chance.
Yeah. Like,
He moved the ball.
I mean,
think about it.
We're talking about two things.
If they didn't get stopped at the goal-to-go situation in the first half, or they didn't get stopped on the quarterback sneak on 4th-and-1 in the third quarter, it's a completely different game in terms of the overall complexion. So I'm not sitting here blaming Taylor Heinicke for the fact that they lost on the road to what might be the hottest team in the NFC in the San Francisco 49ers. Taylor Heinicke is the guy that's got to make this push for you if you're Ron Rivera. You got to dance with the girl that brought you. That is Taylor Heinicke overwhelmingly over Carson Wentz.
The reality is that they don't have any quarterbacks, right? I mean, that's the reality. Ron Rivera does not have a good answer here, and he's trying to make a postseason. And so if you're the Green Bay Packers, I'm sure you're feeling pretty good about that. The reason that I think the Commanders can get this done and get this win, no matter who's under center, though, is that defense. And that's what was supposed to be the reliance for this Commanders team as we entered this season. That defense has been disappointing. Even last season, it was disappointing. They've started to get it together from that perspective. But that's a job, by the way. We mentioned jobs that might be open. I don't think they're going to can Rivera, but that's a job that could become open if we're comparing it to the Denver Broncos job. And would you rather have a guy that you've at least seen be good in the NFL for a decade in Russell Wilson than take over a franchise that has no answer at quarterback and you're going to be starting from square one?
Yeah, I the ownership situation there is such in flux. Rivera's got a lot of respect. I'd be shocked if Washington win it. I think Arizona, if I was running that Arizona team, I'm going a different direction myself if I'm running a team. They gave him a huge contract. Who knows? I think Peyton will coach next year. I don't know where, but I don't think it's – I just don't think – who knows? I don't think it will be Washington. They seem to love Rivera there.
Rivera, yeah. I mean, we're going to keep that NFC train rolling, but we're going to take a quick break.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys, your tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Thanks so much for listening to the pod.
Welcome back to First Take. With the college football playoff semifinal games set to take place on Saturday, the defending champions and number one team Georgia are the favorite to win it all at minus 135. Well, number two Michigan is plus 290, number four Ohio State is plus 350, and number three TCU rounds it out at plus 1600. We've got the great Sam Acho with his fantastic red suit, I might add, joining us now. Now, Sam, which champ would make for the best story? We love a good story.
We love a good story. And if you love a good story, you're going to have to pick the champ that gives you the best story. And the best story is obviously the team with the lowest odds. That'd be TCU. And here's why. The best stories always are the Cinderella stories. This is a team that has come back seven times after being down double digits in the second half. A team that not only has the lowest odds to win, but a team that no one really wanted in. They said, oh, it's the Big 12. You're not really playing any competition. If you watch the games all season long, you're saying, man, is TCU, do they belong in there? Are they going to be ranked? All those things. And then you go and you take down big, bad Michigan with J.J. McCarthy doing a little wink right there. You take down Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. Imagine that, right? No one expects it. And then imagine, just imagine, talk about a storyline. Imagine playing Georgia. Kirby Smart always says, you're either elite or you're not. And TCU, 10,000 undergrad. It's not this 30,000, 40,000 big school, small private school in Fort Worth, Texas. The first Texas team to be in the playoff. Imagine little old TCU taking down big, bad Georgia, the defending champs. If there were ever a story to tell, that would be the story. There can be no other story when you come to Cinderella stories, best stories in college football.
All right. TCU?
No, I disagree with Sammy on that because okay. In college football, you don't have this is not Hoosiers in basketball. This is not the little high school team coming out of nowhere to win a high school championship. This is not Norman Dale. Okay. And this is not Jimmy Chirkwood hitting all those shots. So I don't think it's TCU at all. I think the story is Michigan. Harbaugh's the story here. He's never won a championship. Either a Super Bowl, he lost to his brother. Michigan, for all the greatness of Michigan, you know, Bo never won a championship, Schembechler, and the only championship they won was Lloyd Carr. They split it in 97. So it's not like Michigan, who every year wins titles. This is not Georgia. The world's bored of Georgia. Sorry, James, Mr. Dunn. The world is bored stiff of Georgia. Michigan is your story. Ann Arbor, Big House. Harbaugh, last year they got destroyed in this semifinal game, which I think will help them. I think, and it's a big, Michigan is a, that's college football. I mean, Michigan is college, TCU is not, Fort Worth, Texas is not college football.
And imagine, Mad Dog, if that's the story.
That's
you just
the
said
story.
If TCU, not college football, as you say in your words, takes down Michigan, takes down Jim Harbaugh, takes down this elite team, there's no better story. You pretty much set it up as an alley-oop.
He's trying to turn Michigan into a lovable underdog here. I don't know what world we're
living
in.
There's no lovable underdog with
Michigan. There's nothing
lovable
about this Michigan team. And we're already sick of Georgia, by the way. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But, this isn't Alabama, exactly.
No.
I mean,
yeah.
We just got one from Kirby. Nevertheless, TCU is easily the best story. Sam's right. It's not even close. Because the best stories are always the unpredictable stories. And this was completely unpredictable. People want to compare this to Cincinnati. It ain't Cincinnati.
No.
The Horned Frogs, nobody could have seen this coming. At least Cincinnati, you could have had like an inkling, right?
Yeah.
Good
yes.
program. You could have seen the trajectory.
No one ever
here,
saw TCU.
With TCU, first year head coach under Sonny Dykes. What he has done, that story. Max Duggan as a Heisman finalist. He wasn't even the starter at the beginning of the
yes.
season. He got benched for a red shirt freshman.
Uh-huh.
He took an injury in order to get him to be the starter. And he ends up in New York for that Heisman ceremony, it's already the best story in college football. It's not even close. If you were to actually make a run here and actually beat Georgia, as well as beat it, winning the semis as well on the way there. Like, there is no better story in college football already. That would be a remarkable story. That would be something that we've never seen.
Never seen. And
never
You could make an argument. So, I mean, I think we all agree that's the best story. We can talk about the second, but like the argument for the second best story still isn't Michigan.
We're sending out love for Georgia, though. No,
it's not
Georgia. Michigan's going ahead for Jace.
But it's not Georgia either. I think the second best story, I mean, if I'm
saying the second best story?
It's Ohio State.
Oh, please. Well, you're right there. It is second best would be Michigan, but at least Michigan's going according to plan.
No.
Frankly, Michigan's behind schedule.
Amber.
Harbaugh's behind schedule.
USC beat
last year in the semifinals.
Ohio State got mollywopped against Michigan. Ohio State wasn't even supposed to be in the playoffs. Ohio
Michigan
State was sitting at home thinking that they needed all the help. They needed a miracle, and they got it.
They got a miracle.
No one expected that to be
Ohio State.
They lost to Michigan on November 26th. They thought their season was over. I was watching. I wasn't there. I was sitting in the studio watching it.
Michigan put their flag on the field.
Bingo. And then
it was
then
bad.
Something happened.
Yep.
Yeah, they lost their way into a college football playoff.
And then something happened.
USC.
We went to sleep. We woke up. USC lost. Ohio State got in. And then imagine this. You're rocking with me now.
I'm not rocking with you.
Imagine if
Ohio State lost their way into playoffs before. I've seen them come off of a weak schedule before.
Sure.
We're just 100%.
Now imagine if they went and they beat Georgia. Imagine they went and they beat this dynasty that is almost coming, this soon to be
dynasty. Ohio State's more the dynasty than
Georgia. I mean, I'm just saying, like, if Kirby Smart wins again, I mean, what are you going to say? It's a dynasty. You can't argue with that.
If he wins again.
Bingo. So you go and beat him. And then all of a sudden you get a rematch against Michigan in the national championship.
Oh.
You lost back to back years, and then you go and beat them. Now that's a story. That's got to be a story.
Nobody likes Ohio State. Ryan Day, nobody likes him. Listen, I'm going to throw this at you because I can, and I probably shouldn't, but I'll throw it at you.
Oh,
the hell of it.
No.
On January 10th, okay? 3-6
Okay.
On radio.
Oh, man.
If TCU wins a championship, I won't get a phone call. If Michigan wins a championship, they will dominate for 3 hours with 9 lines.
Right. That
Michigan is a national, and they're not a big favorite here. Nobody thinks Michigan's going to beat Georgia. Harbaugh's never won. Last year they got destroyed. So Michigan has an advantage. They come into the game with a big name. It's Michigan. It's the top 3 or 4 places in the country in college football. And if they play a Georgia, they're going to be a 10-point underdog in the game. So they have the underdog theme going, and they got Harbaugh, and it's Michigan. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But you're talking about brand name. The reason that's a story is because of the brand name, because of this big blue blood. That's part of it. But the reason why TCU matters more is that they're like not even on.
They don't have a brand name.
They don't have a brand name. This is Max Duggan.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying this
Sunny
is like
Dice.
The little engine that could?
The little engine that could. This is the Cinderella story. Like, oh, you know, go back. You're not going to be. And all of a sudden, this magical thing happens. You get the little pumpkins, the little horse. And all of a sudden, you show up and the shoe fits.
Yeah.
Mad Dog. The shoe fits. This is the name brand. This isn't the big
Cinderella
bad.
This?
I mean, I try to make it happen.
It's the reason that fairy tales exist, though.
Bingo.
It's the stories we love. Mad Dog hasn't watched enough Hallmark movies, right?
But he's right. He's right.
But
no one's going to call about it.
No,
it's not a big brand, but it's still a better story.
But Mad Dog's also going to say what happens after midnight.
I tell you right now, I'm shocked that you guys do not think that Harbaugh, Michigan, who has not won,
he was supposed to be here. Who's behind schedule?
I don't know if anybody thought Michigan was not favored at Ohio State.
They didn't hire Harbaugh not to win national championships.
Oh, no, no. They hired Harbaugh to beat Ohio State. That's what they hired Harbaugh for.
Sonny Dykes did not get hired at TCU to win a national title this season.
Well, that's fair. But Harbaugh hired. At Michigan, all they care about is beating Ohio State.
True.
And that's what hurt Michigan last year because they beat Ohio State and they thought the season was over. Then they walked into the Georgia game and they got destroyed. And I think that will help them this time because last year beating Ohio State went out the window when they got killed on New Year's Eve to Dunn's team. But here's what we're going to agree on. Okay, here's what we're going to agree on.
All right.
Nobody in America cares about Georgia right now. Okay. Let's get them knocked
there
off.
There are several
even
people
Ohio
care
State,
about Georgia.
Jamie, let's get them knocked off.
No.
Get them on their merry way. Kirby Smart's got no personality.
Oh,
let
come
them
on.
Go. Let them go, and let's have an Ohio State-Michigan rematch in a championship.
The take from Doggy is that nobody in America cares about SEC football.
Yeah.
That's the take.
Yeah, that's the take I've ever heard one. I mean, like, you're laughing right now because I think...
No, I'm sick of Georgia. Aren't you sick of Georgia?
I think you hear what you're saying, Matt Dogg, and you know you
what
don't believe...
What did Georgia do to you?
People care about Georgia.
I'm so sick of Georgia.
How are you not sick of Ohio State and you're sick of Georgia?
Well, I am sick of Ohio State.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sick of Ohio State.
Are you sick of Alabama?
I knew I liked you.
I love Saban, so I don't root for him in championship games, no. Okay. I rooted for Cincinnati last year. That was a disaster. And, you know, one thing about TCU, it's not like that TCU almost got to a Final Four there a few years ago.
Yeah, they did.
It's not like TCU
different
came
coach.
Out of nowhere that nobody's ever heard of.
Different coach.
They've been pretty good. They won a Rose Bowl.
Fired their coach last year. You say pretty good. They just fired Gary Patterson last year.
But, the program's been on the map. It's not like it's been Andy Dalton.
And a national championship
they won a Rose Bowl.
Cement their place on that map.
You guys, Fort Worth, Texas is not a big deal. Oh, my God.
The Horned Frog does terrify me.
It's the Big House. It's Ann Arbor. It's Harbaugh. It's Michigan football.
Michigan.
It's the Wolverine on the helmet. That's football, and I haven't won. That's a story. I'm sorry. You guys are wrong.
So you were on Michigan.
I don't like the root for Harbaugh. I'll probably, to make Amber happy, what is it, 7.5?
Yeah, I think it's 7.5.
New Year's Eve at 4 o'clock. I don't go out anyway. I'll take the 7.5. I'll take the points. Have some fun.
All right, so Michigan.
Michigan knows the story.
Oh, I'm rooting for TCU. I'm not saying I think TCU is going to win this.
TCU.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for TCU, though.
I think Michigan's going to win.
Yeah, Michigan's going to win.
But I think it's a better story if TCU finds a way to pull off that upset and pulls off another upset.
And can they do it?
I think Michigan's going to win.
Okay,
Michigan's going to win, but I don't think that you should sleep on TCU either.
No.
Like this high-powered air raid offense.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize the Wolverines haven't seen a ton of it in their season, right? And they're about to run into it defensively. Yes, we know that Michigan D is a phenomenal defense, but this could give them more problems than people are willing to admit. I don't think TCU is going to get embarrassed like Cincinnati got embarrassed. Again, those comparisons to me are a mess.
They're not comparable.
Kendre Miller, Amari DiMarcado, Tay Barber, Quentin Johnston, that's TCU. You and Max, that's who's good. That's who has to compete. These are not like big named players, right?
Yeah.
Kendre Miller comes from a small town in Texas. If they find a way to win, that's a bigger deal. But it's just a lot to overcome. Michigan seems like that storybook fairy tale deal, and I think that's where they're going. But if TCU does it, no one's going to believe in the championship as well.
Yeah. Well, we will wait and see on New Year's Day.